Good evening, Ketchikan and Southern Southeast Alaska. Welcome to Book Talk. My name is Charlotte Glover, and I'll be your host for the next half hour, bringing you the best in books from the Ketchikan Public Library. Good evening and welcome to Book Talk for Thursday, March the 15th, I believe. I'm in the studio pre-recording the show as I'm on spring break holiday, and then next week there'll be something else in the space of Book Talk, I believe, so I'll be back in a couple of weeks taking my special boy to New York, and I'm sure we will have many bookstore adventures. In particular, I want to see Books of Wonder, which is a very well-known children's bookstore in New York. I've been to the Strand as a teenager with my dad, the big used bookstore, and of course there's a ginormous Barnes & Noble that would be fun, but I really want to make it to Books of Wonder. I hear they have some incredible rare books, and speaking of rare books, we're going to do a spotlight event in April for First Book Southeast Alaska. That's the nonprofit here in Ketchikan that provides books to low-income kids through various community programs such as Community Connections, Head Start, Parents as Teachers. Big Brothers, Big Sisters, that was on the tip of my tongue. Anyway, we're going to have a great auction of book bundles, Caldecott winners, Newbery winners, signed books, even a signed J.K. Rowling. But lots of books from my personal collection to benefit First Book, and that's coming up on April 20th. We'll be telling you more about that in the weeks to come. So I may be scoping out some more signed books for our fun event while I am in the big city. And meanwhile, the library is going to just go on the down low. It doesn't mean there's nothing going on at the library, because there's always something happening at the library. March 19th. The Ketchikan Garden Club will meet at 6:30 p.m. Sharon Zink will be explaining the Grow Project and distributing plants. Gail Nixon will discuss the best way to grow plants in containers. And Maria Pointer will give a brief update on invasive plants. I think there are 44 people in the Garden Club, if I'm not mistaken. I got my membership booklet this week. And what a great group of people if you're at all interested in gardening. They are just on a roll these days with fantastic, thoughtful programs and something for everyone. So come on down to the library March 19th at 6:30. Teen Advisory Group or TAG meets in the Adult Library 2 p.m. on March 24th. Kelly Johnson corrals the teens at the library. You can always give her a call for more information. March 26th, I'm looking forward to coming home to meet Alaska author and National Book Award nominee Debbie Dahl Edwardson. She is speaking at the Ketchikan Public Library at 6:30 p.m. Also, of course, books will be available for signing. Debbie lives in Barrow, Alaska, where she teaches online courses in writing for children. And she's the author of three books set in Alaska, including the picture book Whale Snow, the critically acclaimed Blessings Bead, and her latest My Name Is Not Easy, which was recently nominated for the National Book Award. This is a tremendous, tremendous achievement for anyone from Alaska, and it hasn't happened in decades. I think John Haynes and Tom Sexton, the poets, were the last and perhaps only Alaskans to be nominated for the National Book Award 30, 40 years ago. It's a big deal. This is the Olympics. This is the Academy Awards for books. And so I want to meet Debbie Dahl Edwardson. I think she's a real inspiration. I have heard her on teleconferences, of all places, talking about the need for school funding and school library funding in particular. So I've heard her voice over the airwaves. I can't wait to meet her. That's March 26th at 6:30 p.m. March 30th, the UAS Ketchikan Campus Library invites you to a screening of the PBS film Irina Sendler in the Name of Their Mothers, beginning at 6 p.m., which features a 95-year-old Polish heroine, Irina Sendler, who tells the unknown story of a conspiracy of women who outwitted the Nazis and rescued thousands, yes, thousands, they believe, of Jewish children from the Warsaw Ghetto during World War II. Associate Professor of History John Radlowski will introduce the film and lead a discussion afterwards. Call Kathleen at the college library for more information. And then we're moving on to April. And April, we are looking forward, April 10th, to three Alaskan poets reading from their new books at the Ketchikan Public Library at 6:30 p.m. Peggy Shoemaker, the Alaska Writer Laureate's coming back. Amber Flora Thomas, the author of Rabbits Could Sing, and Nicole Stellan O'Donnell, the author of Steam Laundry. It's going to be a wonderful evening. Well, you know, last week we were talking about Michael Morpurgo, or the last week or two, anyway. I just wrote an ad-lib about him, so I'm losing track of where, when, what. But just to follow up, as a cleaning out my book talk bag this morning, I found this story from Christmas time about McDonald's. This is in Great Britain, mind you. McDonald's in Great Britain to give away Michael Morpurgo books with kids' meals, these little tiny miniature books. They're about 5 inches high. From the red carpet to the golden arches, an unlikely champion in the battle to get children reading has emerged in the shape of McDonald's. Again, this is in the UK, which is set to give away 9 million books by Michael Morpurgo, author of the smash hit children's novel War Horse, with its Happy Meals. The fast food chain is linked up with publisher HarperCollins to hand out millions of copies of the former children's laureate's Mud Puddle Farm books aimed at younger readers, along with its Happy Meals and one of its biggest ever promotions. Can you imagine what would happen if we could get Mo Willems to do a picture book for McDonald's, somebody big? The move is supported by the National Literacy Trust, which said McDonald's size and scale will be a huge leap towards encouraging more families to read together. 8 out of 10 families in Great Britain visit McDonald's. And pointing to the National Literacy Trust recent research, which showed that 1 in 3 children in the UK, almost 4 million, don't own a book. Director Jonathan Douglas said he was very supportive of McDonald's decision to give families access to popular books. And so people that have been purchasing Happy Meals this winter have their choice of different books. And Book Trust is the government-backed charity in the UK, which gives away 5 million books a year to babies and children. I'm thinking similar to our RIF. And wow, isn't that amazing? Even in Great Britain, we always think of them as being so literary. But lots and lots of children in our developed world don't have books. Many, many more in other parts of the world have no books either. So let's work on that, okay? That's what First Book is all about, by the way, providing children with their own first book. Got it? You know, and if you don't bring your library materials back, bad things could happen, because this is from June 24, 1950, the police notes, the Ketchikan Daily News police notes. A taste for reading brought trouble to James Weeks in police court this morning when he was sentenced by Magistrate Ginger to serve 10 days in jail on charges of vagrancy and failing to return 5 books to the public library. Woo-hoo! Weeks told the magistrate he liked to read and had drawn the books from the library last winter when he had lots of time. The books were left in a sea bag, which he stored in a friend's room and had not seen since. The magistrate suggested Weeks spend 10 days in jail to catch up on his reading. You can't make this stuff up. How about that? Isn't that great? He got to spend 10 days in jail to catch up on his reading. You know, if we put everybody in jail in Ketchikan that had an overdue book, we wouldn't have space for everybody. True. It's sad, but true. The Los Angeles Times book finalists have been announced. And many, many interesting categories, including biography, Clarence Darrow, Attorney for the Damned, John A. Farrell, Malcolm X, A Life of Reinvention, Manning Marble, Catherine the Great, Portrait of a Woman, Robert K. Massey. Does he write a book like every week? I think so. Reading My Father, a Memoir, Alexandra Styron. My Long Trip Home, Mark Whitaker. For Current Interest, Is That a Fish in Your Ear? Translation and the Meaning of Everything, David Bellos. El Narco, Inside Mexico's Criminal Insurgency, by Owen Grillo. Thinking Fast and Slow, Daniel Kahneman. Pakistan, A Hard Country, Anatole Levin. And The Panic Virus, A True Story of Medicine, Science, and Fear, Seth Munkin. For Fiction, Ghostlight, Joseph O'Connor. The Cat's Table, Michael Ondaatje. The Buddha in the Attic, Julia Otsuka. Binocular Vision, New and Selected Stories by Edith Perlman, and Luminarium, Alex Shekar. I love that word, Luminarium. First Fiction, The Art of Fielding, Chad Harbach. 10,000 Saints, Eleanor Henderson. Leaving the Atoka Station, Ben Lerner. Shards, Ismet Preck. And The Ariviste, James Wallenstein. How about for History, The Anatomy of a Moment, 35 Minutes in History and Imagination by Javier Cercas. 1861, The Civil War Awakening, Adam Goodhart. To End All Wars, A Story of Loyalty and Rebellion, 1914 to 1918, Adam Hochschild. Molotov's Magic Lantern, A Journey in Russian History by Rachel Polonsky. And Railroaded, The Transcontinentals and the Making of the Modern America. For Mystery and Thriller, Started Early, Took My Dog, Kate Atkinson. Plugged, Owen Colfer. 11/22/63, Stephen King. Snowdrops, a Novel, A.D. Miller, and The End of Wasp Season by Denise Mina. For Poetry, Songs of Unreason, Jim Harrison. Discipline, Don Lundy Martin. The Public Garden's Linda Norton. Double Shadow Poems, Carl Phillips. Devotions, Bruce Smith. Science and Technology, A Hole at the Bottom of the Sea, The Race to Kill the BP Oil Gusher, Joel Achenbach. The Information, A History, A Theory of Flood, James Gleick. Unnatural Selection, Choosing Boys Over Girls and the Consequences of a World Full of Men, Mara Hvistal. Grand Pursuit, The Story of Economic Genius, Sylvia Nassar. Blood Work, A Tale of Medicine and Murder in the Scientific Revolution by Holly Tucker. And Young Adult Literature, Beauty Queens, Libba Bray. The Big Crunch, Pete Hauptmann. A Monster Calls, inspired by an idea from Siobhan Dowd, Patrick Ness. Life, An Exploded Diagram, Mal Pete. The Scorpio Races, Maggie Stiviter. And the 2011 Robert Kirch Award winner is Rudolfo Anaya from my home state of New Mexico. The New Mexico-born Anaya's award-winning 1972 debut novel, Bless Me Ultima, became the most widely read and critically acclaimed novel in the Chicano literary canon. It was followed by the sequels Heart of Aztlan and Tortuga. Anaya's other works include Albuquerque, the Sonny Baca Quartet of Detective Novels, and a number of books for children and young adults. Anaya also served as a professor in the University of New Mexico's Department of English Language and Literature, and is a winner of the National Medal of Arts from the National Endowment for the Arts. He is a national treasure, very, very beloved in New Mexico, and he gets an award for lifetime achievement. How cool is that? Well, we have a Parnassus Books here in Ketchikan, which is many decades old. But there's a new one in Nashville, same name. We've been getting a kick out of that here in Ketchikan. And a writer recently made the drive to Nashville. She said, in retrospect, the trip south I took with two friends a week ago might seem silly. I have access to nearly any book in the world from my home computer. If I need to browse the stacks, we have many well-stocked libraries in Evansville, and a bookstore with comfortable stuffed chairs where I can sink in and get lost in a book. My Kindle and iPad are already filled with books I'm waiting time to read, and my 9 bookcases are so full that the overflow is lined against the wall, stacked 2 feet deep behind the couch on my living room floor. Hey, great idea. This doesn't address the 9-foot bookshelf of garden books in the garage. So why was it so important to drive 3 hours south to see a small storefront bookstore in a crowded neighborhood near a shopping mall on the west side of Nashville, Tennessee? Perhaps it was my way to pay homage to books, which have entertained me from the first day I imagined myself riding on the back of my friend Flicka or solving mysteries with Nancy Drew as a child. The passion continued, with the terror I felt in the torture chamber and the girl with the dragon tattoo and the impending doom of the hurricane and the devastating flood in New Orleans as I recently relived Katrina through Zotone. Books not only fill me with passion for the stories they tell, they also set me on the path to be a writer, and I owe them a little respect. No matter that I fully embrace the digital age, there's just something about the importance of the presence of bookstores that celebrates authors and draws them together with their readers to talk books. It wasn't just that the trip created a nice diversion in the heart of winter. I just had to witness what it would take for author Ann Patchett to succeed where large corporations with economic analysis at their fingertips fell victim to bankruptcy. Plainly, I needed to support the clear passion and compulsion of Patchett, who worked with former book publisher accounts manager Karen Hayes with the intention of righting a wrong in Nashville. Nashville had once been home to a fabulous independent bookstore known as Davis Kidd until it closed in 2010. Patchett, in an op-ed piece for the New York Times last August, said she considered calling the bookstore Cicada after the cyclical bugs that emerge every so many years for a quick mating and feeding frenzy. She equated the bug cycle to the cycle bookstores go through. The little bookstore grew into a big bookstore, which was squashed by the superstore, which folded beneath the internet store, which made people long for a little bookstore. The whole process took about 13 years. Patchett, author of State of Wonder, Bel Canto, Run, and Truth and Beauty of Friendship, among others, told NPR's The Diane Rehm Show, "I don't know if I'm opening an ice shop in the age of Frigidaire, but I can't live in a city that doesn't have a bookstore." She told Rehm the bookstore is named for Mount Parnassus, which in Greek mythology is the home of literature, learning, and music. "We will be Nashville's Parnassus by providing a refuge for Nashvillians of all ages who share in the love of the written word." The key to the bookstore, Patchett has maintained, are the smart readers, bookstore workers, who will help you make selections. On the opening day, Patchett herself said she was taking books from readers and giving them better choices. "We found the bookstore in a busy neighborhood near the Tony Mall at Green Hills. The actual bookstore was anticlimactic, no bells and whistles or even a coffee shop here. Yet there was a smartness to the selections, and the design was creative. The size of the store prevented it from offering complete collections of most authors, save the store's owner, but surprisingly, the selection was engaging and matched either my own library or my curiosity. I loved the child-size entrance to the children's area, and it was smart to have bookshelf headers that were chalkboards so that the stock of books can fluctuate with the demand. I didn't go out intending to buy a stack of books, but I did plunk down $75 for a friend who was even more passionate than I to become a friend in support of the bookstore. I walked out with a copy of the Essential New York Times Cookbook, Classic Recipes for a New Century by Amanda Hessler, Mr. G, a novel about creation by Alan Lightman, which is a delicious-looking book, I might add, and the two most recent issues of Alimentum, The Literature of Food. We tapped the bookstore recommendations for a lunch spot as well. Two workers both recommended Burger Up and Firefly Grill, but differed on their favorite. We opted for the Firefly. We found an engaging writer-waiter in a funky setting with beads and posters and curtains covering every bit of the walls. After an excellent lunch and decadent desserts, we drove by some of the highlights of the city, including the Parthenon, which was built as a replica of the Parthenon in Athens for the 1897 Nashville Centennial Celebration. You'll find it in Centennial Park on West End Avenue. From there, it was a short trip downtown where the music from a band from one venue was competing with the next, and gawkers were taking pictures of those standing as statues of Elvis along the streets. We gathered a list of stops for our next one-day trip. From downtown, it was easy access to the interstate and home to find a spot for my new armload of books. There you go. I've always wanted to go to Nashville just to hear music. Wouldn't it be great? So you can stop at Parnassus in Nashville if you ever get there. Well, this week's book and the time we have left is Bringing Up Bébert, One American Mother Discovers the Wisdom of French Parenting. My French is terrible. Spanish-accented French. Anyway, Pamela Druckerman is a former Wall Street Journal reporter who moved to Paris in 2003 to be with her British boyfriend, now her husband. She's given birth there to a daughter and twin boys, and she has found the French women to be astonishingly self-confident and assured as parents. For one thing, their culture is so regimented in some ways, especially with their rituals for sleeping and food, that the kids are all kind of on the same schedule, which is fascinating. And also, French women get tremendous support from the state. There's national paid maternity leave, subsidies for nannies and high-quality daycare, free preschool. You know, with that kind of support, you'd be a lot less frazzled as a parent, too. And at the same time, there's all this support, but French parents are not nearly as paranoid as American, she says, about high-achieving children or readiness for school. They are more interested in experimental play and, as they say, blossoming. Blossoming, yes. It's a very personal account because, of course, Ms. Druckerman is raising children as she's writing this book. She makes a lot of vague generalizations, but is generally entertaining and thought-provoking as well. Every culture raises children slightly differently. And I agree with Pamela Druckerman and the French that American parents could set a few more boundaries for their kids, teach them patience. She talks at length in several chapters about how French children are purposely taught patience and also purposely taught civility and good manners. And we're going to go there. And it reminds me of our own child. And he gets a lot of compliments at age 11 on his phone manners, which he deserves. He's very good on the phone. But it also both infuriates me and makes me laugh simultaneously because guess what? His father and I taught him how to answer the phone. We actually took 5 minutes out of our busy schedules. I think that's about what it took. And we played phone one day when he was 4 or 5. And we taught him how to answer the phone and say, you know, hello, this is Liam. May I please speak to, Susie? And then we taught him at home how to say, one moment, please, I'll get my father, who's the frequently the person they're looking for. Or, she's not here right now, may I take a message? We taught him maybe 3 sentences. Anyway, I always say, parenting, it's a verb. I applaud the French in their insistence that children can learn and they can rise to a good standard of manners. And she says, while the maternal brings us all more into French life, that's the daycare, it also makes us realize that French families observe social codes that we don't. After a dinner at the home of my friend Esther and her husband, who have a daughter Bean's age, Esther becomes agitated because the little girl won't come out of her room to say goodbye to us. Esther finally marches into the girl's room and drags her out. Au revoir, the 4-year-old says meekly. Esther is soothed. Of course, I'd been making Bean say the magic words please and thank you, but it turns out that in French there are 4 magic words. S'il vous plaît, please, merci, thank you, bonjour, hello, and au revoir, goodbye. Please and thank you are necessary, but not nearly sufficient. Bonjour and au revoir, and bonjour in particular, are crucial. I hadn't realized that learning to say bonjour is a central part of becoming French. Me, my obsession is that my children know how to say merci, bonjour, bonjour madame, Audrey Goutard, the French journalist with 3 kids, tells me. From the day, age of 1, you can't imagine, I said it to them 15 times a day. For some French parents, a simple bonjour isn't enough. They should say it with confidence. It's the first part of a relationship, another mother tells me. Virginie, the skinny stay-at-home mom, demands that her kids heighten the politeness by saying bonjour, monsieur, and bonjour, madame. My friend Esther insists on bonjours at the threat of punishment. If she doesn't say bonjour, she stays in her room. No dinner with guests, Esther explains, so she says bonjour. It's not the most sincere bonjour, but it's the repetition, I'm hoping. Benoit, a professor and father of 2, tells me there was a family crisis when he took his kids to stay with their grandparents. His 3-year-old daughter would wake up grumpy and didn't want to say bonjour to her grandfather until she'd had breakfast. She finally compromised by agreeing to say pas bonjour, papi, not good morning, grandpa, to him on the way to the table. He was happy with that. In a way, she was acknowledging him, Benoit explains. Adults are supposed to say bonjour to each other, too, of course. I think tourists are often treated gruffly in Parisian cafes and shops, partly because they don't begin interactions with bonjour, even if they switch to English afterward. It's crucial to say bonjour upon climbing into a taxi, when a waitress first approaches your table in a restaurant, or before asking the salesperson if the pants come in your size. Saying bonjour acknowledges the other person's humanity. It signals that you view her as a person, not just as someone who's supposed to serve you. I'm amazed that people seem visibly put at ease after I say a nice, solid bonjour. It signals that, although I have a strange accent, we're going to have a civilized encounter. In the United States, a 4-year-old American kid isn't obliged to greet me when he walks into my house. He gets to skulk in under the umbrella of his parents' greeting. And in an American context, that's supposed to be fine with me. I don't need the child's acknowledgement because I don't quite count him as a full person. He's in a separate kid's realm. I might hear all about how gifted he is, but he never actually speaks to me. When I'm at a family luncheon back in the United States, I'm struck that the cousins and step-cousins at the table, who range from age 5 to 14, don't say anything at all to me unless I pry it out of them. Some can only muster one-word responses to my questions. Even the teenagers aren't used to expressing themselves with confidence to a grown-up they don't know well. Part of the French obsession with bonjour reveals is that in France, kids don't get to have this shadowy presence. The child greets, therefore he is. Just as any adult who walks into my house has to acknowledge me, any child who walks in must acknowledge me too. Greeting is essentially recognizing someone as a person, says Benoit, the professor. People feel injured if they're not greeted by children that way. So that's something very, very interesting. One cultural difference is the importance of the greeting in France. Bringing up Bébé, one American mother discovers the wisdom of French parenting. Pamela Druckerman is an engaging and thought-provoking and lively read for a rainy afternoon, and will certainly make you think about all the different ways we raise children around the world. And Druckerman is skilled enough as a writer to keep you absorbed and just tired enough as a mom for you to sympathize. So all in all, a really fun read, Bringing Up Bébé. One American Mother Discovers the Wisdom of French Parenting, Pamela Druckerman. That's it for Book Talk for this evening. Thanks so much for joining me. I'll be back in a couple of more weeks with news from New York bookstores. Should be fun, fun, fun. And meanwhile, I want you to stay tuned right here to KRBD Ketchikan, your community-supported Coast Alaska station. Don't forget the quiet drive, because we're going to get it done in one-day pledge drive in April. And you're going to stay tuned right here for news from National Public Radio and then Babblefish. Good night.